Welcome to Gospel Tangents, the best source for Mormon history, science, and theology. I'm Rick Bennett. In part two of our conversation with Steve Mayfield, we're going to get a little bit more acquainted with him and his background. He's been a crime photographer for years at the Salt Lake City Crime Lab, and we'll also talk about some of the historical photographs he's worked on as well. Check out our conversation. I also want to remind everybody that our Michael Quinn transcript is now available on Amazon as well as on our website. If you'll subscribe for just $10 a month, I'll be happy to send that to you as a PDF right away. Or for $15 a month, I will send you a copy of each paperback as soon as they're available. So check it out. Now back to our conversation.
I moved back to Colorado in 1981 and got on with the sheriff's department. My degree's in law enforcement in Jefferson County, Colorado, which is out of Golden, which is on the west side. Now, during the 9 years I worked for them, nothing too exciting, except the fact that Jefferson County, after I left 9 years later, 1999, gave us Columbine County. Mm-hmm. So that was my department I used to work for, and I knew a lot of the people involved.
Wow.
Again, I could get these newspaper clippings over there, and I, like I said, I told you earlier that one of the things I've been doing since I started doing this, whether I was in San Francisco or Denver or even Salt Lake, if I didn't buy the paper, I could go to the library and get out of state newspapers. I think almost every other week I would go to the libraries and spend the Denver library 3 or 4 hours just photocopying up clippings. Hmm. And when you have that, and I fell in love with the New York Times. The New York Times is one paper that they have microfilm of all their papers from way back from when it started in 1850 up to present.
Wow.
So I'd get the microfilm and go all the articles on. I had a project. I was going to photocopy everything they had on the Mormon Church. And I got halfway through it. I've still got more to do. But it's amazing how as they go over the years, these articles that they would have on the Mormon Church from, like, say, 1850, where you'd see names like Grant or Sherman or Custer or all these people, and Brigham Young's getting just as much space in the paper as these guys are.
Wow.
You know? They even had reporters in the 1800s out here doing stories to the New York Times. Of course, the New York Times is the grand dam of all papers in America. And there was one year where they had, one particular year, they had over 100 articles in one particular year on Mormonism.
Wow.
That's almost two a week.
What year was this, approximately?
In the 1880s.
Oh, so polygamy was big.
Yeah.
And
when you consider the paper, what the big paper is, it may have been 8 or 10 sheets, but that's almost two a week.
Wow.
It would be other years where there was none. You know? Mm-hmm. And that's not even talking about articles about Ezra Taft Benson or George Romney or politicians. This strictly. So it kind of back my mind is one thing. I've got boxes someplace of all these photocopies of their microfilm. It's one of the things I love to do is going down going to the library. You know? And of course, point over here, I will buy papers and do it. When I lived in Colorado, I had the major papers of Utah sent over to me. That was the Logan, Ogden, the Salt Lake papers, the Provo and the St. George papers were sent to me. Wow. I had subscriptions.
Uh-huh.
And BYU, you know, did the universe, whatever. And then I came back here and I kind of backed off on the other papers, but I still get the local papers here. Like,
so are you one of the biggest collectors of Mormon media stuff?
Probably not as much as the church, you know? But I do. And because of that, and I've collected not just to kind of hide it home myself, but to share it. That's why last number of years I've shared, for example, you've interviewed Matt Harris from Colorado. Mm-hmm. Well, mm-hmm. For the past year, I will pick up things because of his interest in the Black Priesthood issue, clippings. Now he says some papers he can get on the internet, but others he doesn't. And I'm picking things out. Yeah. One of the things I've noticed is that on the church magazines, the Ensign and the Friend and whatever the Teeny Bopper
New was, Era.
New Era. A lot of more photos of Black members of the church in them. And it's just like last couple of years, you like conference issue. Number of about 20 pages had Black people in them. And I don't know if that's if the church magazine are trying to incorporate that to show of that inclusiveness or what, but I just kind of noticed that. So I will buy.
So you've noticed a change in church magazines, whereas yes. It was all white before, and now yeah. There's more color in
there's more diversity of minorities and things like that. And the same thing with the church news, and with this being the year of, you know, with June 8th and things like that. So I'm just sending these big packets. When I went up to Boise for the Mormon History Association, Matt was there, and here you go, Matt. You know, I had did interviews off the radio. Mm-hmm. So again, I enjoy doing this because I'm collecting it to help people who might be writing. Me, I have poor writing skills, so I'll never write a book, but to share it with people. And I've done that with a number of other people who have presented. My friend Craig Foster has written, along with Neil Bringhurst, three series of Persistence of Polygamy. Mm-hmm. Volume 3 have my photos in them of some of these communities.
Oh, yes, you're a photographer.
Yes.
Tell us about your photography.
I grew up in a home where my dad was a camera salesman, managed a camera store in San Francisco. Lousy as a kid taking pictures. I had this little Instamatic when I went on my mission. You know, I took more than one roll picture a year. I mean, it was great. But I got here in Utah when I went to school and got myself a nice camera, 35 millimeter. So I started taking more, but 35 millimeter is expensive. You know, a roll of film, $7-$8 just to get it developed. Well, they came up with a digital camera, thank goodness. Now, one of my, which we haven't got to yet, where I work now in law enforcement, is the Salt Lake City Police Department, their crime lab. And that's how I know George Throckmorton, but we'll get into that. One of my things I do at crime scenes is photography. So that just builds right into it. And with digital, you can take 1,000 pictures and not waste a dime on anything. You just have to download it on a computer and you're fine. Well, that a number of years ago, maybe 15 plus years ago, I started taking pictures at Sunstone Symposium, and they appreciated that. So next thing you know, I'm now their official photographer. I go to the symposium and I just document everything. I miss some of the sessions, but I just go around taking pictures, and they know it. I have fun with it because I catch people sometimes eating, their mouth open, or sleeping, or whatever. Then I got involved with doing it for the Mormon History Association, for the John Whitmer Historical Society, Utah State Historical Society, when they have their conference, they have me come and do it. You know, and they're very gracious about it because they'll put my name up here, he does this. Because I'm willing to go miss out some sessions or hearing the whole session by taking photos of people who's speaking, what's going on. And of course, you know, I go to things like Kirk Bench's book signings and take pictures. And Kirk is very good about it. Here's a disc of my photos. June we went up to there in Boise with the Mormon History Association. We had 1,500 images I took.
Oh, wow.
So, and I've got a backlist of people. Can you send me a disc? Can you send me a copy of my photo?
And I'll say one of the first, and I don't remember, I think it was Mormon History Association's. I always like to sit, usually I try to either sit in the front or the back, wherever the closest plug is, because I always got to plug in my laptop. Yeah. But I was like, I remember they sent out a newsletter, and I was in the picture, and I was like, oh, nice.
And so, you got one of me, too.
Yeah.
A good one. So, but it's fun, too, because everybody knows me after 20 years of doing this. As you're the photographer. Mm-hmm. I've got to know Elder Jensen, the church historian, and Elder Snow. They know I have a camera. I have people come up and say, where's your camera? Well, here it is. You know, if I don't have my camera with me, they say, well, go get your camera. There's something wrong. You have to have your camera. But it's fun, and it's enjoyable, and I feel I'm involved in something. It's something that's historical enough that eventually these things go BYU. And I get with digital. We don't know how long the digits are going to last. You know, we're finding out that negatives, if they're not preserved right, start to fade.
Right.
That's why, and the fun part is going to BYU because the film, the negatives, they're putting in a freezer, basically.
Wow.
And you go, if you want to get it, you have to have 2-day notice because they have to bring it out. Let it thaw out to use it.
Wow.
We don't know what's going to happen with the disc and putting on a computer saves them, but on the disc itself, we don't know yet. When they'll disintegrate or not.
Right. So. Put them on the internet, they'll last forever.
Yeah, exactly. But, like I said, it's been one of the things. And besides some criminal historical events mm-hmm. I've had pictures on, it's the LDS stuff. And I'm proud to say that in 2008, at the Mormon History Association conference in Sacramento, I was given a special award for my contributions to Mormon history because of what you're seeing here, the collection and the photography and things like that, mm-hmm. which I'm very humbled at because it was such a sweet thing to to have happen. You know, so I got to sit up there with my little certificate. You know, so it excites me when I go to these things because of just the stuff. You know, I get away from what I do. You know, for a living. You know,
Now you mentioned you were a crime scene photographer.
Mm-hmm. Or a crime scene investigator, a crime lab tech. These are all titles I have.
So, especially here in Utah, can you talk about your participation in some of the more famous or infamous, I guess?
Not presently, as long as I'm employed. I will say, in the 25 years I've been with the Salt Lake Police Department, I've been involved in the Elizabeth Smart kidnapping. Did some photography and work on that. Lori Hacking murder, the little girl that was kidnapped and killed, Destiny Norton. One of the things I've done for about 11 years was to document the activities of the protesters at General Conference.
Oh, Kate Kelly. Okay.
Yep, one man. Just not then, the street preachers and things like that.
Oh, the street preachers, okay.
Because of the lawsuits that these folks have had against the city and the police department, it became necessary for us to document their activities to show that as a city and as a police department, we're following federal guidelines to free speech and city ordinances. Mm-hmm. They were taking pictures of us, we take pictures of them. And for 11 years, I did it every conference. So I don't know what went on inside Conference Center, but I was out there with all the various groups and things. It was important enough that when they had the federal lawsuit here, my photos went to the federal court, and they also went to the appeals court in Denver. They used my photos in defending the city.
Which federal lawsuit? I'm not familiar with
The federal courts here in Salt Lake on the lawsuit. The street preachers sued the city for violating their rights of free speech.
Oh.
Because we were...
What year was this?
Oh, this was 10 years ago.
10 years ago, yeah. Okay.
Some in the... because I started in 95 and went to about 2006 or so. And then I stopped doing it because it became unnecessary. But they were saying that, see, we had free speech zones where these people could stand, as long as they weren't blocking people walking across the crosswalk or blocking away interest. And sometimes you might have a little, I call it push and shoves, you know. Somebody didn't like what you were doing and push and shoves, and we had to control it.
Yeah, some of those can be not very nice people.
Sometimes they get, there's some fun stuff. Other times, because you've got the street preachers and anybody who had something, sometimes they'd have protests, march. You know, it was almost like there's conference and then there's a circus going on outside. And even Mormon people doing their thing. There was one lady came from Idaho and she had a sign that said, if you're a Mormon, I'll give you a hug. And she was hugging everybody and it's like, oh, you know. So that was interesting seeing that. And usually had media coverage sometimes. Well, here they're out there protesting. Again, Craig Foster and I, a couple years ago at a fair conference, did a presentation. What Mormon History and at a fair conference about the history of protest around Temple Square. And just some of the stuff that it's just crazy. I mean, the day comes when there's nobody out there, I'm going to worry because, you know, they're going to be there. They always have. I saw that when I first attended a general conference in April of 1970 when I came back with my state president and they were passing stuff out. What's all this, you know? And that's how I came across Gerald Sander Tanner because someone was passing out their newsletter. Utah Lighthouse, Modern Microfilm Company at that time. So that's where I found out about them and all these people pamphleteering out there, you know. Now it's even got bigger because they'll have signs and whatever, and you'll have marches. I mean, it's part of the environment in Salt Lake and at other places because they'll also do it at temple pageants, temple openings.
Manti, I've seen them there in Manti pageant.
Up at the Martin Harris thing. Every temple opening, they'll be there. Again, in Denver, we had, in the 80s, when we had the Denver temple opening, we had 3 weeks, and they were out there. And like I said, they had, there was always somebody every night for those 3 weeks lecturing about the church someplace in Denver. And they had the one Protestant church where they had their own, you know, little visitor center where you go to the visiting, you go to the temple, and then you go over there, and they can have their little thing, too. So,
a Protestant visitor center?
It was a Lutheran church, but it was a number of Protestant churches, evangelical churches, that kind of joined up together to print that stuff. The thing about history that about churches says there's nothing new with this stuff. We've had it from day one. I can't jokingly say that when Joseph walked out of the grove, we've had it. We've had our critics, both secular and religious, and nothing's new. It's the same thing. And like I said, the day comes when they don't do it, I'm going to be worried. It's just part of the environment. You go with it. I know one of the things I try to tell people down there, because people would come and say, well, can we stop them doing it? No. They have a right to be out here on the sidewalk and do it. Just ignore them. Don't get involved with them. Don't get in a fight. Just ignore them. Sometimes they will go, what I think is overboard, with their insoles. They used to stand out before they were removed from the Main Street Plaza and stand out there near the gate of the east side of the temple and yell and call the brides sluts, whores, and prostitutes. You know, like, well, you know, one day of your life, your family's filming it or taking pictures, and these guys are yelling this stuff.
Yeah.
And they would taunt. Sometimes they'd wear temple outfits. That's another thing. You wear a temple outfit outside. Wave the apron at people. Wave the garments at them. And they had one case way back in 94, before I started doing it, where this gentleman, member of the church from Provo, where he came up and got waved and grabbed the garment out of the guy's hands. Well, the guy said, well, he assaulted me. He touched me, you know. This poor guy had to go to court, and I basically said, well, you really didn't attack him, but you did. So he was given a year's probation, and they said, if you keep your nose clean, we'll wipe it off the books. But it's this taunting that you see sometimes, and sometimes the best thing is just ignore it.
Which is very hard to do sometimes.
Sometimes.
Because they can be very offensive. I've heard some.
And of course, like I said, you got to be careful because they're filming. I've seen on some Facebook pages, my picture shows up, and, you know, oh, there's the guy taking our picture, me taking a picture of them, taking a picture of me, you know. then, like I said, I worked on, you know, in the interest of.
Let me back up. Okay. There's nothing, you can't really talk too much about the Elizabeth Smart case or Mark hacking? Or,
nothing in it. You know, I was involved. Mm-hmm. I've been to the Smart House on a couple of occasions on that, a number of places. My job is just take pictures or process for fingerprints and things like that. That was a part of what I would do. Same thing with the other cases. I was just involved with them to some degree with what I do, the photography or collecting evidence or so forth.
Mm-hmm.
Like I said, I missed out on Crowley Square, you know. But I did do,
that
you know,
horrible.
All those things. But that one.
For people, some people might not know what you're referring to with Crowley Square. Can you tell us a little bit about that?
Yeah, it was 2007. A gentleman walked into Crowley Square in Salt Lake.
Which is a mall.
A mall, yeah, on the east side there. And opened fire and killed five or six people before he was killed by police officers off-duty police officers on scene.
Mm-hmm.
And it was one of those just random mass shooting type of things. And that comes right after Elizabeth Smart. And so it got a lot of national publicity.
Valentine's Day or the day before.
Something like that. Because I was on the phone talking to a long distance to a girlfriend. And I'm watching TV and all of a sudden I was like, oh my God, because they're right there live. And it says, that's Crowley Square. What's going on?
Yeah.
And so, you know. But I never got involved with that one.
Yeah, I was actually in graduate school at the time, and I remember somebody said, don't go down by Trolley Square. There's cops everywhere.
Yeah, yeah.
And so I remember I did kind of drive by, and you know, I had no idea what was going on at the time. And then, you know,
that takes a lot of work because of the scene itself, and diagramming and pictures and collecting, and it's just, you know, one of those tragedy things that in our time we're
and
having.
And it was so senseless. Like, yes. It just made no sense at all.
Yeah. So it's one of the sad things of my business. You know, I kind of sadly joke, but I've always got job security.
Well, unfortunately.
Unfortunately. But then I'm looking forward here to next year to retire, maybe.
Okay.
So I can go back to doing the fun stuff. You know? Like I said, what I do with this stuff, I enjoy. I have such a high going to these conferences and being involved in stuff that it just takes my mind off the bad stuff. But yet at the same time, my interest in history, I'm involved in some historical things.
I hope you enjoyed our conversation with Steve Mayfield. In our next conversation, we'll talk about some interesting lawsuits with the FBI involving Mormons.
And they had two, racial discrimination and religious discrimination. And in this lawsuit, he kept bringing up the Mormon issue all the time. And when it finally was settled in the federal court in El Paso, Judge Button, I believe that was his name, ruled that, yes, there was racial discrimination against these agents for promotions and whatever. But the religious aspect, I think there's points there, but he kind of backed off. He didn't rule on that issue. This is a big time.
So let me make sure I'm understanding on that. So Matt Perez was complaining about religious discrimination, that the Mormons were protecting Mormons. Is that what
he was
saying? Well,
among many things, Mormons are getting promoted over Latinos.
Mormons are being favored in that case.
Yeah, favored.
I hope you enjoyed that short clip from our next interview. If you'd like to hear the entire interview uncut, please go to our patreon.com/gospeltangents and subscribe for just $5 a month. If you'd like a transcript of this, please click the yellow subscribe button at gospeltangents.com, and I'll send you this and all future transcripts. Also, if you'd like a paperback like we've got here, those are available at our website at amazon.com. Just do a search for Gospel Tangents. Please get all updates at our Facebook page at facebook.com/gospeltangents. We're also on Twitter at Gospel Tangents. You can also get transcripts individually at our website, gospeltangents.com/shop. Finally, make sure that you subscribe on our Apple Podcast page. Just do a quick search for Gospel Tangents there and give us a 5-star review while you're at it. Thanks again for listening. Your support helps create more Mormon history classes and podcasts such as this, and so I really appreciate you listening. Please share with your friends. Click here to subscribe, here for a transcript, and over here you'll see some more of our great videos. Thanks again.